What we're going to be talking about is catechesis. And, you know, what does it mean? How is it done? And in the process, I think you'll find out what it really means. But how it's done is really what I'm going to focus on. Catechumen comes from the word that really is involved in the idea of echoing. And what a catechumen is somebody who echoes back what they hear. Now, when we think about it, we usually think about what somebody says, what somebody confesses. It's an echoing of what one hears, one echoes it back. The word, as it's used in the early Christian church and as it's used now today, is echoing back not only with what one says, but with how one lives. It's a twofold process. So it's both, you know, a confession, and it's also a life. And up until recently, when we did catechesis, how I was trained, how I did it as a pastor, it was usually kind of a course type of thing, classroom, syllabus, you know, and it was the conveying of knowledge. It was just the giving of what we believe in terms of doctrine, and it was called pastor's information class. You conveyed information. It was that kind of a program. And for many years, that worked very well. This definition of catechumen that I gave you is not, this is information here. They don't go by that anymore. What they go by is the word formation. And that what you have is somebody who is being formed into a person who has a life in a community, a confession. It's more than just simply a knowledge thing, a surface memory, but it's in the deep memory where faith is formed. So it's a totally different understanding. And this idea of catechesis is involving more than just simply the conveying of doctrine. Is a very, very ancient idea that has now come back into our midst and has found its place among us. And it is here to stay. It is here to stay. I think you're going to certainly find lots of people who are going to do pastor's information classes. But generally speaking, the movement is moving away from that. And in fact, I think you're going to find, from what I'm going to tell you, that whole notion is going to be gone forever. It's a totally different way of looking at it than we are used to, and yet I think you're going to see that there are resonances throughout the history of the church that really make this the kind of program. And you've just used the wrong word. Program is not the word we use. It's process. It's a process that I think is most unique. Let me tell you how it started, because I think that's very helpful to see where we came from. Is everybody here in Missouri? Are there any Elka?
I happen to be Elka right now.
You happen to be Elka right now. Good. Well, I don't say that so that I, but this is becoming an Elka, Missouri project. Because we're working with Elka and we're using some of the things they've done. So I'm glad to have somebody here from the Elka. Because you can go back and encourage your pastor to be involved in this. In 1972, after Vatican II, the Roman Catholics issued a rite called the RCIA, the Rite of Christian Initiation of Adults. RCIA, you may have heard of it. This rite came after when the theologians in Vatican II during the 60s sat down and looked at, you know, everything and put everything on the table. They recognized two things that there should be a difference between a rite for infant baptism and a rite for adult baptism. And they realized that they had never, in their entire history, written a rite for infants. Never. They just simply used the adult rite and used it for infants. And so they said, why don't we write a rite for infants? And as they went about doing that, they went back and looked and studied the early catechumenate and the early church and how they did things. And they found themselves putting everything on the table and coming up with this way of making Christians that they call the RCIA. Now, there are a couple of things about it that are important. First of all, it is only for adult baptism. There's a very important part. In other words, They wrote a rite for infants, but they focused on adults and the process of catechizing and bringing them into the church. The second thing I think you're going to see about it is that it's rite-driven. And what I mean by that is it's the various liturgies, the rites, that are so important in this. And the third thing is that the catechesis itself, what we sometimes think of as instruction, this catechesis, this instruction, they really say nothing about. It's pretty open. It's very, very open to whatever a particular parish wants to do. And we're going to see that many of them are going to use the lectionary as the means of instruction. But that is not prescribed in the rite. That's something that happened after the rite itself. This was written, of course, in Latin in 1972. In 1983, it was translated into English. And in 1988, it was approved by the bishops in the USA to be used in our country. So it's only been in use about 8 years in our country, even though it goes back into the 70s. My familiarity with this comes from studying for an STM at Yale University beginning in 1982, before the English rite was out, in which I was introduced to it by a Roman Catholic by the name of Aidan Cavanaugh. And he happened to write a book back in 1978, which really is extraordinary now that I think of it, 6 years after this thing, in which he does an analysis of this and talks about adult baptism. It's called The Shape of Baptism. And so he was teaching this kind of a thing back in 82. And he did it through the early catechumenate, because you're going to see as we go along that this is based on what early Christians did. They actually took the model and basically plumped it down in the 20th century and kind of reshaped it a little bit. So I've been at this for quite a while, but you can see it's fairly recent. And then there are a couple of other interesting dates. I think it's 1992, the Episcopalians came out with a similar rite. Episcopalians. In 1994, the ELCIC, the Lutheran Church of Canada, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Canada, has published their own variation of this. In 1995, this is extraordinary, the Mennonites did. They even have a video. It's great, which shows you that this is kind of, I mean, Rome and the Mennonites usually aren't thought of as being in the same room. You know, they're quite different. In 1997, the Methodists are going to come out with a rite. They're in galley form already. And I would guess sometime soon after this, the ELCA will as well. And they're going to be involved in getting that right now. Now, we in the Missouri Synod were invited with the ELCIC and the ELCA to get together and talk about this. There were some Episcopalians here. These three have been talking about this for about 10 years. So there are, as you can see, quite a representation of Christians. You know, some from sacramental communities, more non-sacramental, who are involved in this thing. So this isn't just a kind of a Roman rite. It's a rite that has a great deal of possibilities across the board. Now, you're probably asking yourself, what does this thing look like? And let me show it to you, because I think you'll find it to be interesting. Then we can talk about the various things. This is going to be constituted by a number of different stages and rites. So I'll put the rites in between here. The first stage is sometimes called the pre-catechumenate. It is also called the period of inquiry or the period of evangelization. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the whole process down here, and then I'll go back and talk about it. Okay? This is stage one. And stage one ends with a rite. And the rite is a rite of welcome. The rite of welcome. The Roman Catholics call it candidacy. Then after this is stage two. And stage two is the catechumen of itself. This is the heart and core of it. And this is where most of the time is spent. This thing ends up in a rite that is called the rite of enrollment. And this normally takes place in a Roman church on the first Sunday in Lent. This is going to be part of the catechumenate, but it's that final part of it during Lent, which is very early Christian catechumenate. Following this rite, stage three, we would probably just simply call it Lent. But they call it the period of the elect. This is during Lent, when they go through their most intense catechesis. And this ends in the rite of baptism. With the Easter Vigil, and of course, includes the Eucharist. And this brings us to stage four, which is after baptism. And I'll explain what this is, but it's called mystagogy, which is where they explain during the Easter season the sacraments. And in the Lutheran rite, this is not in the Roman rite, there's a rite of what is called vocation on Pentecost. Now, this is based on, as I said, the early church catechumen, but it's also got some very strong biblical foundations to it. And there's a pattern here, and the pattern is very simply this. And this is not that. You know, it's not that significant in terms of its character. If you break it down in this simple way, I think it makes sense. Begins with instruction, which is this period, okay? Then you go through baptism and Eucharist, and then you end with instruction. Now, we in the Lutheran churches have been doing this for years. This is new, having instruction here at the end. But this is something we've been doing for a long time, so this is not that big a deal. It's not that different from what we've done before. Now, let me explain these various stages, but before I do, maybe you have a question or comment. All right, I'll go on. This opening stage is, to me, one of the most fascinating. It's the stage of inquiry, evangelization. And what is perceived here is something that I think we need to pay attention to. The stage is probably open to a lot of different ways of doing it, but it really is interesting. What happens is when somebody comes into your church, they're invited by a member, or you know, you go out and meet somebody and invite them to the church. This stage takes seriously the fact that people have questions about God, about themselves. And they need a place where they can feel comfortable asking these questions. And this stage is perceived as a time when people come into the church and there's really no agenda. They just simply come together and talk with people. It's very relational. They basically tell their life story, their life's journey. And we respond by telling them the journey of the church, the story of the church, the story of Christ. We make confession of our faith. And we talk about how there's kind of an intersection now in the life of this person and the life of the church. Here's where we also introduce them to our church. We give them, you know, a sense of who we are. We give them a tour of our building. We tell them the kind of things we do here. But it's an opportunity for people simply to sit down with people in this church and ask questions. Now, what some of the Lutheran pastors in the ELCA who do this, they say this is the time for primary questions. who's God, who am I, where did we come from, what do we believe? You know, these very basic questions that just simply need to be asked at some point, and we have people there to respond to them. During this stage, there are various ways in which this happens. One of the ways in which it can happen, this depends on the various churches, is that, you know, visitors come in and there's kind of one night a week where they sit down with members of the congregation. They're all different kinds, over coffee or whatever. And they just simply have a conversation with whoever they feel comfortable speaking to. And this is kind of a set thing on Tuesday night or Wednesday night or whatever. The pastor who did that and has done that said that that is not as helpful in his community as where somebody comes into the church on a Sunday, they want to know more about the church. He assigns to them what are called catechists, two catechists. He has a male and female. And they sit down and they talk together back and forth to one another. They ask questions and confess the faith, this kind of thing. But it simply brings them through a period of time until they get to the point where they are ready to join in a more formal way the process of moving towards either baptism or reaffirmation of faith. And when one gets close to the end of this period, there are two things that happen. One is, these people have to start coming to church on a regular basis. They have to start hearing the Word of God. The other thing is that they're going to be assigned a sponsor. This is a very important part of this. This is when they are going to receive their sponsor. And this sponsor is going to hear the Word of God with them in the church. They're gonna go to some catechesis with them. They're gonna teach them how to live like Christians. They're gonna talk to them. They're gonna be with them along the way. And when they are ready to make, and there's kind of a level of commitment here. When they are ready to make that commitment, this rite takes place in the narthex. And they gather together with these other people who might want to be joining there. And there are three things that are given to them. And these three are the three things that are going to be used in their catechesis. Now, this is the Lutheran rite, not the Roman rite, in terms of using this. The first thing is a catechism. The second thing is a scripture, book of the Bible. And the third thing is a hymn, the Honest Book Liturgy. Those are the three books that are given there, because these are going to be now their source books. And what is said of them in this rite of welcome is that they are now ready to hear the gospel. They are ready to be hearers of the gospel. And it's quite a statement. It's in the narthex. Now, in Rome, they have a time period that they follow pretty strictly. And this would be during Advent 1. With the vigil being the goal. Or I should put the Advent appearance here. They are now candidates for baptism or for the reaffirmation of faith. As soon as they are welcomed into the church, they enter into this group called the catechumens. This is the core group. And one of the keys to this whole thing is that there's no prescribed time limit for any of these. It can be whatever the individual needs. So they simply enter this catechumen. And there are a couple of things that drive this, okay? I mentioned before the lectionary. One of the ways in which the Roman Church does it is that this lectionary is the primary means of catechesis. And what happens is this. They hear the Word of God read in church. They hear the sermon. And they hear it as a little group. I mean, the catechumens sit in one part of the church together with their sponsors. So they hear this. And they hear the sermon, and then after the sermon is over, during the prayers, they're dismissed. They go to another place where they sit down with the catechist, and they go through the lectionary even more detail. Now, that's one way of doing it. Some have, you know, this tripart thing. Lutherans tend to use these three things. Sometimes it's on Sunday and other days of the week. It depends on the parish. Depends on the situation. But anyway, this is the period of time where they are going to be given the most, you know, care in terms of the process in which they're going through. And it's not just information. This is how to live, how to, you know, how to think, how to act. I mean, there's very much a strong ethical, moral kind of character. It's a life that you're entering into, not, you know, not a doctrine. It's a life, and the life is constituted by a person. When this time is over and everybody feels satisfied, and it doesn't have to happen in a year. In the Roman Rite, it can take more than a year. But on the first Sunday in Lent now, there is a rite of what is called enrollment, where they are now set in this final movement towards baptism. And this is a very, very specific time in the Roman Rite, because there are three things that happen here that are most unusual. For one, this is the first time they hear the creed and they're given a copy of it. And they have to memorize it, they have to recite it before the congregation. This is now the baptismal faith into which they're moving. This is also one of the first times in the congregation, at least, they're going to pray the Lord's Prayer. And they have to memorize that as well. So these are two fundamental things that are going to be part of their life. The third thing is that there are going to be what are called scrutinies. And this is public examination of their life. This is where sponsors come in. Have they, you know, given up doing evil things? Have they given up a lifestyle, perhaps? Have they visited the poor, you know, visited the sick, I mean, fed the poor, these kinds of things? In the early Christian communities, that is exactly what a sponsor did. He didn't question them on doctrine. He questioned them on how they were living. And this is going to end in exorcisms, where Satan is cast out of them. Now, this is a very important period. And Lent, as some of you know, in the early Christian communities, was primarily catechetical. Notice the whole community is moving with them towards baptism. Then during Holy Week, starting with Spy Wednesday, okay, Monday, Thursday, Good Friday, they are going to have some specific catechesis about what it means to be a Christian, more doctrinal. They're going to participate in all the events, you know. And then this is going to culminate either in their baptism at the Easter Vigil or their reaffirmation of faith and, of course, their receiving of the Eucharist for the first time, not the time. This is the highlight. Everything moves towards this. This is the climax. Not only of this rite, but of the church here. Everything moves there. Then they join the congregation in worship on Easter morning, and then for the entire Easter season, they have mystagogy, which is based on the sacraments. In other words, they learn not about baptism and Eucharist, because they've learned those, but they learn about what the rites mean and what it is they've now entered into. And then on Pentecost, they are sent into the world as Christians who have a vocation. And it's different from before because they have now gone through this process and have become Christian. Now this is, as I said, a simple pattern of instruction, framing, baptism, and Eucharist. But it is a process. It's a way of moving through. And just one other thought, and then I'll let you ask some questions. As you look at this, you can see Luther's small catechism. I mean, here's the creed and the Lord's Prayer. Here are the sacraments, baptism and the Lord's Supper. And what other Lutherans have done is have made this, these two things, tied to the Ten Commandments in center, particularly the first commandment. Who are your gods? And confession and absolution, the office of the keys, would come right in here. Right after the scrutiny. Now this is basically the Roman process with a little bit of changes here for Lutheran Church. But what I want to do after you maybe want to ask some questions is I want to talk about this in terms of its broader perspective as well. But maybe you have some thoughts at this point, or any comments.
It seems the Ten Commandments in that pre-catechumen, it would be quite appropriate because that's where people have basic questions.
That's right.
That they hit any command.
That's right, exactly. And here's where they really are. You're beginning to see what some of the problems are, and those have been addressed here in the catechumen. Now, it's not that you're going to be talking, you know, not about the creed up here, because in our particular case it will be. But It's very interesting how it does work out okay in a Lutheran sense, because it all comes together here. It really does.
Is this related to small group ministry?
Small group ministry actually can fit in this quite nicely. And it's going to take a different shape. It's a different shape. Because one of the things that really is very important about this is, look at what's central, how sacramental it is. And what is also central is that Christ is the center of it. I mean, it is what really forms this. And therefore, I think that you'll see how clearly this whole thing is shaped by a process that is going to be dominated by a strong Christological witness. And that's what those small groups will become. They will become opportunities to work with catechumens or others on seeing how their life is centered in these things. So it's definitely going to be constantly moving back towards the public assembly and not just the private small groups. The other thing that is really clear, this occurred to me right after I saw this, is that this is really your evangelism program. It's your assimilation program down here. And it really is your stewardship program, because this is the stewardship of life. So you get rid of three committees. Boom, just like that. But this is, it's meant to be the whole life of the parish. It's very embracing, too. It embraces the whole parish. The whole parish life.
Okay.
Other comments? Okay, let me, oh, go ahead.
Just a question. Yeah. What has been the experience, for example, you said that catechumenate period
right. Can
last.
Can
what
last.
Are the experiences of congregations, whether Roman or, ELCIC or whoever?
The overall experience is that it's much longer than people do today. So this is going to take more time. And that isn't by force of law, that just people want the time, they need more time. The Roman Rite is a year, although people can take longer. But they start after the vigil, they start collecting the inquirers. And then they really don't, as I said, enroll until Advent. But they certainly meet with them and begin. They almost have two levels here. There's kind of the period of inquiry, and then the kind of the catechesis starts earlier than their enrollment, their welcome. But theirs ends in the vigil, so it's about a year, 9 months to a year. Now, the various ways in which some of the Lutheran churches have done it, the one that I've seen the best is that there are two. One starts in August. Advent is treated like Lent, and Epiphany, or the baptism of Jesus, is one. The other one starts sometime in, say, November, okay, and that goes Lent, Easter. And most find that churches have very little success running a program in the summer. It's just impossible. So there are two classes, and these end up being about 5 to 6 months apiece, about half a year. That's about it. So that's how they've been done in terms of length of time. Now, these aren't actually much longer than what many churches do today. But you could go with it just once a year. It could be conceivably done that way. Or it could be done a different time. The big thing about this is that it is flexible. This one Lutheran pastor, and I did very similar things in Paris. They had catechesis going on all the time. So when a new member would come in, they'd get their catechist, and the catechist would, arrange with them where they would meet and what they would do and who and how often they would meet. And then they would be welcomed at any time that they're ready. And they would enter then a group of catechumens, and they would just simply join that and keep going until they were ready to move out of it. And it was just kind of an ongoing thing. Catechesis went on 52 weeks a year. It's going on all the time. And people just simply joined up and left whenever it was time for them. If it was close to the vigil, great. They just waited for them. So, I mean, that's one of the things about this, is that you never have to wait. It's just always going on. And you have catechists that will help you. So it's not just the pastor, but there are a lot of lay people who are involved as well.
Well, then this sounds like the sponsor has to hang in there until this person decides to be baptized.
Being a sponsor is a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big commitment.
Big commitment, very big commitment. Just a couple of things to give you a glimpse of how this thing is beginning to work itself out. In March, we had a meeting with the three different Lutheran groups, ELCIC, ELCA, and Missouri. They're getting ready, as I said, to do rites. We're just starting out, the Missouri Synod is. And one of the things that was very clear to us is that when we look at the Roman Rite, there are many things that are going to change. For one, Luther's small catechism is going to become central. And we don't know if that's going to be what's the driving force of the lectionary, it's going to be the driving force, or it might be both. But that's certainly going to be central. These three things are going to be there too, because they really are fundamental to what we call Lutheran. This pattern is going to be there, we're going to keep that as well. But everything else is kind of negotiable. And the way in which we're thinking of doing it, and the ELCA is very jealous of us because we have the luxury of time and we have no expectations, is we formed it's called the Working Group on the Catechumens. That's the official word now. And we have no ties to anybody. We are our own group. We're kind of self-made. It originated out of the Concordia Publishing House. You know Barry Bob, most of you. He called me and got Jim Brower together, and we sat down and talked about this. We thought we might want to do something like this for Missouri. We have, as part of our committee, Paul is on it as the director of the Commission on Worship, Jerry Cosberg, director of evangelism, and another prof here at this seminary, Chuck Aaron. And we're probably going to have Richard Wright, the parish pastor, which would be very nice to have him. He's my pastor in Fort Wayne. I'm going to coordinate. Paul's going to be, he's going to find this out for the first time right now. He's going to be in charge of the rites.
I thought you were going to make me get money or something.
That too. Well, we have to talk about that a little bit too. But you're going to really be, because he's Commission on Worship. Jerry Cosberg, the evangelism guy, is going to be involved in the pre-catechumenate. It was an evangelistic time and assimilation. Those are going to be his two areas of expertise. Chuck Aaron's expertise is Luther's small catechism, so he's going to do that. I'm going to basically be the kind of the overseer, the bishop. And I'm going to do the history and kind of the theology and coordinate it and kind of, you know, keep it perking along. And we also have a CPH rep. Barry's not going to be able to do it anymore, so it's going to be Ken Wagner. He's going to be our rep. Nice man. And what we're going to do is we're going to do this not from above. We're not going to dictate the rites. We're not going to say this is what you should do. But what we're going to do is we're going to get 20 to 25 parishes, pastors, lay people from those parishes, and they're going to do it. It's going to come up from below. And we're going to teach them about the history, the theology of it. We're going to show them all the different rites, Episcopalian, Methodist, all those rites. Give them a picture of the whole thing. And then we're going to send them out, you know, after they've asked their questions and say, no, go, just go do it. Start it out. And we're going to give them 5 years. 5 years. Take our time. And we're going to put everyone an email, so they're going to exchange these things, and we're going to do it as a consortium, as a collegium of people. And the working group is going to be kind of we're going to encourage, we're going to resource them, which is the new word now, we're going to resource them.
Having networked them,
we're going to resource them. And we're going to, you know, do some guidance, some critique, you know. But I mean, let's say you were in on this, you know, and you wrote a rite of welcome that just knocked everybody's socks off. Well, you can send it out an email, and everybody goes, "This is it. This is the one we've been looking for," you know. And they may revise a little bit, and you go, "Great, great revision," and that becomes kind of the rite that everybody does. I'll develop, say, as a pastor, a lectionary-based catechumenate. Paul will develop a catechism-based, you know, and maybe you'll do one out of the liturgy. You know, so there'll be a number of different things. One of you will do a two-track, one will do a one-track. We'll have all these things in the hopper, you know. And many of them we may offer to the church. But we're going to take our time. Just work these things out slowly, see how it works. You know, there's going to be no high pressure in this. hopefully get together once a year. This is where we're gonna need money for. We're gonna need about $25,000-$30,000 a year to get all these people together, depending how many we bring in. And just touch base, see how things are going. In April, we do have money for training workshops with the ELCA. And what they do, and I think it's a great thing, is they take you through this whole process in a weekend. And everybody at the conference role plays. So I'll be a catechumen, you'll be a sponsor, you'll be a catechist, you know, you'll be something else. We'll all have a role in it, and we all go through it together. We have an Easter vigil, you know, we have the whole thing. And it's really quite something. I guess it's a very, very moving weekend. And it's one in which certainly those who are involved, you know, by being there, certainly see what's happening and what it's all about. And this will be a time for the ELCA to try out their new rights. And this is when they're going to test market, so to speak, their rights with these people. We're going to use it as a time in the Missouri Synod to kind of look at their rights and begin our process of slowly doing this and kind of shaping it for a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod expression. There's a ton of stuff out on this. I mean, I can't tell you how much stuff there is. And last week in Madison, Wisconsin, I taught a course of STM students, which is Masters of Sacred Theology. 25 of them. And half of them had never heard of this. And I had conversions. It was great. And what we did is we talked about the New Testament background. We talked about the way in which this shows up in the early church. So we looked at all the rites. Then we showed the new rite. And Friday, the last day of class, I had overnighted to me a video from the Roman Catholic Church called This is the Night, which in a half hour takes you through this whole rite. And I had never seen it, so I had no idea. I mean, I had no idea what was there. So we all sat down, and we've been thinking about this intensely for about 4.5 days. So it's 10:30 in the morning, we're quitting at noon. And I was just surprised, I guess, shocked by this video. Because not only was it accurate, but it was very, very moving. Especially where it occurred in this class. It's a lot of it is people just talking about their experience with this in the Roman Catholic Church in Texas, multicultural parish. But they actually show you how they baptize. In a big, huge font. Huge font. I had it up here before. It's a cruciform font. And they go down in the water, they have bathing suits on and a white robe, and they dunk them in the water 3 times. Name of the Father. Do you believe in God the Father Almighty? Yes. Boom. Down in the water. Do you believe in God the Son? Yes. Boom. You know, I believe in the Spirit. And when they come up, you know, they're soaking wet and they're happy. It was so moving. People were just kind of weepy because it's hard to explain. But we were very moved by this. And then they always anoint in the Roman Catholic Church. They got a big cruet of oil. And I didn't know how they did it in the Roman Church. But this guy took this oil and just poured it right by the head and starts pouring down, and then he goes over to the catechumen and rubs it in, makes the sign of the cross. It's extraordinary. And the people were all gathered around the spot, were observing it. And this Roman priest was very comfortable when he did it. And I my fear in the class and looking at it was that it was going to be this very, very Roman high church, but it wasn't. In fact, what surprised me, and surprised everyone else, is that it was very, I mean, it was obviously clear, it's liturgy and everything, but it was very real. I don't know how to explain it. In fact, one of the guys said it's kind of a sacramental Pentecostal. I mean, it was filled with feeling and emotion and very, very moving. And, we enjoyed it. We talked about it for that last hour, and the guys were very, very moved by it. I think everybody felt that it was a wonderful way to conclude it. And this was a blue collar parish. This was not, you know, this was in Pasadena, Texas. And this priest was just completely in control. Certainly, this is going to look different for Lutherans. You know, we may or may not have some sort of anointing. We may dismiss the catechumens like they did in the early church and as the Romans do. We may not. I mean, everything in a sense is on the table. The two things, at least in my mind, that aren't on the table is this pattern. This pattern's got to be there some way. And these three things. they've got to be there. Now, just about everything else is negotiable. You know, we can work it out. I like this period. I think there's a lot that can be done there. And I'd love it if everybody would do the vigil, although that certainly is negotiable. But that is certainly something that could be very, very, you know, we won't use this word. You know, we'll probably use the word catechumenate, we'll have to define it. We won't use elect or enrollment, probably, or candidacy. Maybe we'll use this word, but, you know, everything else is pretty much not, is just negotiable. And it's, and by negotiable, I mean that there are ways in which, depending on the parish setting, ways in which this can be done. And the adaptability of it is what's so good. As I said before, this is embracing everything in the parish. So we're going to... And when I was with these ELCA and ELCIC people, I said this in the whole plenary, and I believe this. In my career, this is the most important thing I will do. I have no doubts about it. It is seen in other churches, and I see it here. People are interested in this. It will revitalize the church. And the reason is because it's centered in Christ. And it raises up the sacramental and Christological character of our faith. In fact, one of the things we discussed yesterday was, you know, churches that are a little kind of put off by traditional liturgy or doing contemporary, will they smell a liturgy in here, that this is a liturgy-based thing? And I said, no. What they're going to smell is Christ. This is deeply, deeply Christological. And I said, if they smell Christ and they don't like it, then they have a problem that needs conversion. And if they don't want to come into this because it's got too much Christ, then, you know. But I think that this is, Paul, why I think you and Jerry are going to be critical. We got to keep this across the whole, and I think we can bring some things together. That'll be great. And I think if we can keep it focused in its deeply sacramental character, then we're going to have an impact on the church. There's no doubt about it. Comments?
Sounds like you're going to have a home page.
We're going to have a home page. Yep. You got it. And I'll tell you, this email is becoming a consuming part of your life. I'm not sure I like it.
Are you answering a lot of letters?
I'm starting to. Yeah. Just because I have to. For a while there, I didn't want to read my mail. I never turned it on. It's kind of nice that way. You don't have to.
But then you turn it on, it's all there.
And then it's all there. They do go away after a month. What's that?
Better than the bills that you get.
Better than the bills, right. I did go an hour and a half to 1 hour and 15 minutes last time, but I did have a full class, and there were gobs of questions. So down to four. I don't need to go much longer. I'm pretty tired, actually. It's been a long... Oh, yeah. Did you have a question? Anybody? Okay. Then I will turn this off. And we're right at the end of the tape.
Perfect.
I want to turn it off.